I've got Dr. Jim Maher, who's with me. Jim's been talking about his experiences when he was chair of the New England Health Service from 1996 to the mid-2000s, all the reforms that were done then during that period. And, of course, we're moving on to the current call for the merger that happened in 2005 of New England Area Health Service being merged with Hunter New England, and the petition that's now being tabled in Parliament by our local member, Adam Marshall, the Honourable Adam Marshall MP, calling for the separation of the Hunter Health Service and the New England Health Service. But before we get onto that, Jim has brings an amazing sort of academic ability to this debate, because you tell us a story. You've done some amazing research comparing us the Australian system with the Canadian system in relation to their health services, haven't
that's,
you, Jim?
That's correct. I did a PhD in political science at the University of Calgary in Canada, and my topic was regional health authorities and federalism, Australia and Canada, and I utilised the sort of knowledge and experience that I'd had in the Australian setting. Mm. And then did a lot of research on the Canadian, and I found a lot of similarities. Australia and Canada are probably the most alike political systems and nations, if you like, in the world.
Yep.
They've got a bigger population than us, but and cover a much bigger area.
Mm.
But they have a lot of the same problems that we have. The tyranny of distance is an issue.
Mm.
They've got large indigenous population as we have, and in fact what I did was to compare broadly the Canadian system with the Australian system, then I narrowed it down and compared the province of Alberta with New South Wales.
Wow.
And then I narrowed it even further down in that sort of typical hourglass sort of thesis organisation to have a look and compare the Chinook Area uh-huh. Health Service, which is based on Lethbridge in southern Alberta,
right.
with the New England.
Mm.
And the similarities were incredible. I remember interviewing the chair of the Chinook Health Service, and at the end of the interview, I just looked at him and I said, wow, I said, I'm blown away.
Mm.
I would have given the same answers, you know.
It's when in your position as chair of the New England Health Service...
Yes. Yeah.
So I just want to tell the listeners, you can't see this, but Jim's brought in his thesis, which is a very, very heavy tome, a very thick, about 2.5-3 inches thick, 140,000 words there. Of course, it conforms to an academic protocol, so probably not light reading, but there is probably a very interesting novella in there. But so, Jim, what out of that research that you did in Canada, what takeaways were there for us here?
Well, there were takeaways on both sides of the Pacific, and I've given papers over there at conferences talking about lessons from down under. Canada's is a huge country, big area, dealing with many of these issues that we deal with. Chinook was interesting because it was a similar sized area. The Lethbridge Hospital, the biggest hospital in that health region, was exactly the same size as the Tamworth Base as it was known then.
Mm.
We had the biggest Aboriginal population of any area health service in New South Wales. They had the biggest Indian population of any health service in Canada.
So First Nations were a very big issue. And of course, First Nations health presents a whole different spectrum of kind of morbidities.
Yeah, that's right. That's true. You know, they had the same issues. One of their issues was a lot of the hospitals were developed in the horse and buggy days, and they were only 30 kilometres aside, away from each other. You know, a day on a horseback or something. And
was pretty nice compared to us.
Well, you know, there was probably an argument to sort of rationalise, but you know, there's some political considerations as well, and. But, you know, a lot of the challenges were very similar. Canada has a public health system. There was no private hospitals in Canada.
Okay.
But there was the emergence of what we might call clinics. which I would call private hospitals, you know, but they denied they had private hospitals, but they were starting...
But they had some private clinics happening.
They had some private clinics and they were starting to do things like hip and knee replacements and so on, you know, but they weren't doing emergency or any of that stuff that's left to the public system to deal with.
Interesting. Yeah.
It was interesting. One of the other interesting facts was a lot of the aged care was in the hands of the what they call regional health authorities. And so a lot of those nursing homes, if you like, were on the campus of the hospital. So there was that continuum of care. People could age in place and so on, but the acute care services were around them with allied health and so forth. I found that very interesting.
And it's not something we do really, although if you look at Gyra, it's not far from that model, just in terms of the location of, say, the aged care facility. Kalora is almost cheek by jowl with
the
multi-purpose.
Yes, that's exactly. Mm. And that's been a long issue in Gyra. I was involved in that at the Armidale Hospital.
Mm.
We actually turned an old nurse's quarters into a hostel for the aged, you know, and so on. And I was part of the earlier discussions about our multi-purpose services and that there. Yeah. But... they were, you know, the similarities were enormous. Your listeners might be interested to know that Medicare began in Canada. We copied them.
Oh.
We made certain changes, of course, to adapt to our situation, but Medicare began in this province of Saskatchewan under an NDP government, NDP New Democratic Party, the equivalent of the Labor Party.
Right.
And they've started that... they have a Canada Health Act, an overarching Canada Health Act that sets standards for the whole country.
And that's a national thing?
That's a national thing, mm-hmm. but the actual running of hospitals and funding of health services is a state or province responsibility.
Jim, I'm really having a terrible moment here because I know that, look both Canada and Australia are, unlike New Zealand, are federal systems. New Zealand has a single government, a unitary system. But am I right in recollecting from my law lectures years ago that the plenary power, like the absolute power, is reverse, or is it the same as ours?
Well, interestingly enough, when they established...
We better not get too legal because people get bored.
No, but when Canada established the federal system there in 1867, and they did it largely to offset the United States because they were concerned about possible invasions from the south.
Right.
And so they...
Well, in the 1860s, why not? Yes.
The Civil War was carrying on in the US and so the Canadians were worried about that. John A. Macdonald was the father of federation, if you like, in Canada. They set up a federal system. They moved west and took over Alberta and British Columbia and so on, and they all became provinces. And that was to formalise government, if you like, in the western provinces.
But the provinces would be our equivalent to states.
Yes, they are.
And in our system, the heads of power for the federal government are quite limited and the states have everything else. Is it the same in Canada?
That's how... Well, no. Because of the fear of invasion from America, they built a very central system.
Right.
Canada was a very centralised federal system. But
that's what I suspected.
And Australia, as you say... was more of a coordinate system of federalism, that is, power resided in the states and certain powers were given to this new central authority,
The Commonwealth Government.
The Commonwealth Government, and they got immigration and that sort of thing.
Well, 36 heads of
defence
power.
And so on, you know.
Things that related to the protection
to the national
and prosperity of the nation,
but
currency.
But the real power, if you like, over mineral resources and all that was left in the states.
And most importantly... I think education, health services,
all with the
transport,
states.
All of those things have remained resolutely. And a lot of people say, I think, sadly, you know, they'd love to get rid of the states and just have a local government and a Commonwealth government federal government. But in fact, the reality is that local government's a creation of the states, and so is federal government.
Yes. So that was the Canadians started out with this very. Centralised federal system.
So a little different.
And Australia started out with this decentralised system.
Yeah, yeah.
But in the course of history, we won't go into it all, but they've gone in opposite directions. Canada is now probably the most decentralised federal system in the Western world.
Right.
And Australia has, you know...
Become very
centralised.
Yeah.
And that was not the intention of the founding fathers.
Mm.
But, you know, depression, war, all the rest of those things that lead to... you know, the issue of power, where power should reside and how you address those challenges. And so...
Well, it's worked well for Australia in some ways. I remember when COVID first happened, the fact that we had a very, very well centralised, if you like, system. We knew where all our... it didn't take long to know where all our facilities were, for example, the breathing apparatus that we needed. Within 4 days, every premier could tell how much of that emergency equipment was needed, whereas that was not the case in the United States. They really had no administrative means of quickly ascertaining what their resources were.
Both Canada and Australia looked at the US Constitution and federal system and picked what they wanted and rejected other ideas and so on, as you know. But anyway, with health, the Canada Health Act gives the federal government the opportunity to establish standards, certain standards about accessibility and all those things, equality, whatever.
So they set the standards.
They set standards, and then the provinces are where the action is.
Right.
You know, if you're a politician, sometimes you've got wielding more power if you're a state provincial premier than you would as a minister maybe at the federal level, you know.
Well, that's not so different to our system.
Yes, it
too.
Is. It is. So I compared those and then I came up with a new model. I picked out the best of Australia and the best of Canada and in the last chapter prior to the conclusion, if you like, I then offered a suggestion because I was looking at the relationship between those area health services or regional health authorities and the central, i.e. state health departments and ministers and so forth, and I could see certain similarities in that relationship, you know. I am a great believer in the regionalisation of healthcare. I think it gives you the opportunity to address the needs of a population, to perhaps remove some of that competitive stuff that goes on between hospitals, you know, that they're just doing it for the doing its sake and they're not really addressing the needs, you know.
Okay.
So when you've got a population, you can look at that, as I said, Bingara, Moree, and so on, and you can then target your resources. You need a decent referral hospital, and here I'd say Armidale and Tamworth are the two. But, you know, people want to have their babies in places like Moree and, you know, and it's only when there's complications that they need to go elsewhere. So you provide as much as you can based on the needs of that community. But, you know, there will be times, and we know that's the case, where people would be transferred from, say, Tamworth or Armidale to John Hunter or Sydney when it's a really acute case. And
so I'm going to throw you a curly one now because I want us to move on to our current challenge, do we or don't we? The mayors of our region have said we should separate from Hunter Health District and go back to having our own. What are we going to do if... Well, if that happens, will we lose access to the specialist care at John Hunter?
No. In the old New England days, depending on their needs, people were transferred on to John Hunter or you have agreements with them. Same with the major Sydney hospitals. People might be transferred to St Vincent's or Royal North Shore or wherever, where the expertise is.
Right.
You know, that we can tap into that as well from the old New England, and if we went back to those boundaries, you know, obviously we've still got access.
Right.
We've still got access. Same with you. Some of the people we found in the northern communities in New England would go to Brisbane or Toowoomba.
Well, that's been one of my bugbears.
And we do those deals at a state level, you know. So when somebody records a New South Wales postcode in that hospital in Brisbane or whatever, then there's a shift of dollars that go with it, you know.
Okay,
so,
right.
Yeah, so it's, you know, we're not going to be cut off from those essential services either Newcastle or Sydney.
That's a relief. Well, I guess the next thing, I suppose, is can you lay on the table really the pros and the cons of the argument? Because the argument, the debate will be had in the lower house in Sydney. How do you think that's going to go, and what would you say for people that haven't really turned their mind to this? What are the advantages of staying united, if you like, with Hunter New England, as a joint or as a large region, and what are the disadvantages? I know you've got a very strong view that decentralisation is better, but let's just try and look at both.
I mean, one would think that by having the larger area, that gives them more political clout when they're negotiating budgets and so on with Sydney, whether it be the Director General and his team or her team, and whether it be the minister.
I'm quite concerned about the fact that we've now come under a regional health minister, Bronnie Taylor. So that if we have concerns here, we don't get to talk to Brad Hazard, the Minister for Health. We get to relate to, with all due respect to Ms. Taylor, she's a junior minister.
Yes. You know, they've split rural health and given it to her to look after. I don't know a lot about it, but I did see the comments where she said to go to back to the old New England days is just a bureaucratic solution. And I think what we've got now is bureaucracy. What we've done is take community out of decision-making.
Right.
We've taken community out of decision-making, so, you know, with all due respect to the managers of our hospitals, they're all decent, well-intentioned people, but they're not answerable to the community. They're not answerable to a board.
Right.
They're answerable to the next bureaucrat in the chain of command.
Right.
And so she would be answerable to somebody in Newcastle. And that person will dictate her budgets or his budgets. They'll dictate their promotion opportunities. They'll be the ones that write reports on their performance and so on. And if they're not towing the line according to the, you know, the bureaucratic will, then they miss out. And they know where their bread's buttered. You know, that's what I'm saying. We already have the bureaucratic, you know. Now, I can give you a couple of little examples. One of our issues is shortage of doctors. Now, we had shortage of doctors in my time, but it was not like this. We didn't have Glen Innes and Inverell and Armidale just recently without a doctor.
Yeah, and that's not an isolated instance either.
No. And we didn't have that situation. We had a shortage, and at the time, the federal minister, Woolridge, I think his name was, Michael Woolridge.
Woodridge.
That's right. He came to the region, and there was a committee set up and an inquiry and whatever. Now, following that, we had the joint medical program established, Newcastle and UNE. And the idea there was that we'll take people's candidates from the regions, we'll train them up as doctors, and then when it comes time for them to go back to or go into the workforce, they'll choose the regions. That was the idea. And I haven't done enough work on where that's at. But
I can tell you because I know, because of my, you know, the next generation that I care for, those medical students go back to Newcastle in third year of medicine. So they're here training here in our region or New England, but they do seem to go back to a city. And so they finished. And I have heard it commented that at that stage in their lives, that they would then be, you know, in their mid-20s. That's when they find a partner.
Yes.
And that's often hooks them into an urban settlement. So, and it detracts from them going back, the original intention being to be trained in the regions and stay in the regions. Well, they can't because now they actually, during their really formative years when they're choosing partners, they still go back
and
to
when
the
city. You know, the idea when the registrars or whatever have them in the regional areas, and the same thing will happen as it used to happen to school teachers when I started. You know, there'd be a bachelors and spinsters dance on, and a lot of marriages got underway at those events, and the teachers would stay on. You know,
that's right.
They married somebody
that's
in the
right.
land.
Yeah,
and you know that happens in medicine as well, but. I think we need to do a lot more of that, but I can recall between CEOs, and we'd interviewed for a specialist here in Armidale and chosen a person we wanted, and we had no one to basically make the decision. You know, the CEOs weren't here, and I was informed of this, and there was a big fear this doctor would go to Port Macquarie. They were offing carrots and tracking him down there.
Because it's quite competitive.
I rang him up, and I said, I'm the chair of New England
this
Health.
This is the candidate.
Yeah, I rang him up. He'd been through the credentials committee and the recommendation was to appoint him. But because there was a drag, and I rang him up and I said, I'm the chairman, we want you here. We want you here. And guess what? He came and he stayed for probably 20 years, you've got that sort of... I cared about Armidale, but I also cared about the other places around the region, and that's what you get. Your communities know what the needs are, and if they're cut out of the process, then you're not getting that feedback. I recall on one occasion a senior bureaucrat from Sydney in the health department rang me up. We were having a meeting in Armidale, and he said, I couldn't get a flight into Armidale, but I can get one to Moree. Can you pick me up? I said, no. I said, by the time I drive across to Moree and pick you up and come back, I said, that's a six-hour round trip. I said, the meeting's over.
Yeah.
That was the sort of lack of knowledge and, understanding of distance. He said, it looks so close on the map. but he never got around to looking at the scale of the map. It just looks so close. You need that local knowledge, and you need people who are passionate about their communities and care about their communities. Doesn't mean to say we win everything.
No.
But I think the situation now is worse than it was in those days.
Right.
In terms of the lack of nurses, the lack of doctors.
The lack of specialists.
And the lack of specialists is exactly... one of the reasons that the New England Health Service supported the establishment of a private hospital in Armidale was because we believed that it would help attract specialists. They could work in both sectors. Under either system, you're going to have challenges. But I personally think what we've done is remove the community from having any say. And who are the community? The community are the taxpayers who fund the health system. The health system is one of the biggest budget items in it, state or federal.
And growing.
And with an ageing population. And it's important that the funders have a say. But not only the funders, the consumers.
Yep.
And, I don't think people realise that when you ship somebody off to Newcastle or Sydney... The disruption it causes the patient, the stress it causes the patient, and the families and friends. If you can deal with them locally, great. But we all know that some of these matters have to go on to the specialists,
hospitals and so on,
and that's the reality, But I think some people are being shipped out for reasons of staff shortages and all that sort of thing. Since my time, the Armidale ICU has been downgraded.
Well, it doesn't really operate.
I don't have a director of ICU, a fully qualified one, as I understand it. Over the last few months, when this discussion's arisen, I've been a patient as well in this year in particular, within the region. I did go to Sydney once, but my surgery was delayed three times before I finally was done. I talked to specialists and GPs and nurses, and I've always asked them how are things, and they all tell me it's worse.
Okay, look, Jim, I think we might... There's a lot more to unpack in this whole subject, but we might stop it there for now. Basically, the message you're saying is... local people for local problems, and history has shown that a separate health district is more responsive to the needs of that
an area can district. Liaise with the politicians, the members who are representing state or federal, but particularly state, and
we can get a better outcome,
and you can get better outcomes, and you get to know people. And I said before, as chair of New England, I used to travel to Sydney regularly and have a meeting with the minister, have a meeting with the Director General. Like, you got to know them on a personal basis, and you could lobby,
more effectively.
Than a chair in a local hospital who might see the minister once every couple of years.
Very interesting. Thank you so much for coming in.
It's a pleasure.
I don't think we've heard the last of this at all. We're going to play A little bit of Paul Kelly. I don't think anybody doesn't love Paul Kelly. He's a national hero.
He is.
So thank you.